Hey everyone, James LaBrie from Dream Theater, and you're listening to or watching the podcast Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian. Enjoy this. These guys are extremely informative. I love their dialogue. I love their interpretation of the songs, who and what we are, what we were going after. They're very accurate in their interpretations and descriptions, and I just think this is a great show, and these guys are doing a stand-up stellar job. So once again, enjoy Talking Into Infinity with JT and Brian.
What's up, guys? Welcome to another episode of Talking Into Infinity, a Dream Theater-centric podcast. I am your host, John. We are live on Facebook, YouTube, talkingintoinfinity.com, the CMSnetwork.com, and the CMS Network Rumble page. We are at those locations every other Thursday at 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. If you are watching on YouTube, please do not forget to click that like button, click that subscribe button, and smash that notification bell so that you are notified every time that we go live. Tonight is going to be kind of a free-form show. We are definitely talking Dream Theater tonight. Full disclosure, Brian is not here. He is actually on the Monsters of Rock cruise. If you guys follow us on Facebook, which you should do, Brian's doing an excellent job of posting some really cool stuff there. He has been running into some really, you know, cool bands and watching some amazing rock stars play and all that kind of stuff. So he is, you know, floating out there somewhere, you know, in deep waters, and hopefully he doesn't go all Titanic on us. But I do have a co-host. You know him, you love him from the Discuss Metal podcast. You may have seen him in the comment section here from time to time. He is our amazing friend, Joseph Wren. So here he is. Let's bring him on. Joe, what is going on, man? Straight from the comment section, right to everybody's living room. How are you, man?
The teleporter brought me in as quickly as possible, John. When you want the best, and the best is on the Monsters of Rock tour, cruise, whatever it is that Brian's having more fun than we are right now. But we are going to have some serious fun tonight because we're talking Dream Theater. It's Talking Into Infinity. If anybody can talk forever, it's John. So I'm excited to be here. I hope I could pick this ball up for Brian and run with it. If not, I know Kale's down there somewhere. We'll play it by ear, John. We'll see how it goes. I got my DVDs. You know, I'm ready to rock. I got CDs over here. I can't reach them, and I'm not going to jump out of the camera. You know, it's just going to be. I got a drink too. I'm ready to go. Let's go.
Let's do it, man. So a couple quick announcements, real quick. So our very good buddy Sean Faust. Don't know if he's in the chat or not. He's actually selling some incredible Dream Theater memorabilia. So he's got to send me an updated list of this stuff, but he's getting rid of some pretty incredible stuff, like back from the 90s Dream Theater type stuff, like autographs and all these things. So he wanted me to pass along the message that if you guys are looking for some rare stuff, he's got it. So I will hit him up and get an updated list from him. So that's going on. Also, I have to send an amazing shout out to Kale McLeish. So all you guys know Kale. He is literally our first listener ever, first viewer ever. And so you guys know I sing in a band out here in the, you know, out in Ohio, and you know, talked about that many times. Well, this Saturday we are doing a benefit for the Defiance, that's a county, city, whatever out here in Ohio, the Defiance Humane Society. And one of the things that we do is all the proceeds from the show go to this animal shelter. Like the band, you know, gets paid a little bit, but you know, they raise a lot of money. One of the things that I do is I walk out in the crowd, and when I say I pass the hat, guys, I'm not even kidding. This is the actual hat that I wear on stage. It's all beat to crap and it's all sweaty and disgusting, and you know, but I pass it around and I try to fill it with cash. 2 years ago, I got a hair over $1,000, and I, you know, last summer I told everybody, I was like, hey man, like, got a little over 1,000 last year, you know, let's see what we can do, and got a little over $1,400. That's just straight cash from a little rural community out in Western Ohio. Like, it's just a beautiful thing. And I posted about it on Facebook, and Kale got wind of it, And Kale actually PayPal'd me all the way from Australia and set off the donations. And already, excuse me, already we have started raising money all because of Kale. So I have to give the very biggest shout out to Kale McLeish for, you know, being just an amazing dog lover, an amazing friend, and for donating money from halfway across the planet, literally, to homeless shelter pets here in Ohio. So guys, like, shout out, major shout out to our buddy Kale, man. So huge stuff. So Kale, I love you. Thank you so much. So Doug McCauley, good to see you, man. He says, nice job, Kale. Yep. Dude, amazing. So all right.
Is
so
his new record for sale yet? I feel like that's a plug option or opportunity right there, John. Like whenever Kale's new record is coming out, I feel like I need to know about that.
Dude, Kale, this is your time. Put the details of the record in the chat so I can bring it up and leave it up on the screen for everybody. Kale does have a record out. It's excellent. You guys can all go get it and should go get it. So we'll do that. So one of the things we were going to do tonight, which is going to be happening at a later date, probably I'd say first show in May or whatnot, but Steve Rosen was supposed to come back on the show. He's the author we interviewed about Tone Chaser, the Eddie Van Halen book, which is excellent. You should all go get it. We are going to do a deep dive into my favorite David Lee Roth era record, Fair Warning. Well, he's selling a shitload of books, so much so that he can't jump on tonight. And he's literally mailing these out by hand. He sold several thousand copies of this thing, guys, from his apartment in Southern California. And he's mailing them out by hand, one by one. So that's what he's doing tonight. So he couldn't make it, told me yesterday. So I hit up my good buddy Joe, and I said, well, you know what? Let's just riff on some Dream Theater. Let's talk some Dream Theater here, because, you know, we get asked questions in email and in private message all the time. I will address one right away. We've gotten several emails from people asking if we know what's happening in the studio, if we have any studio updates. We only have one. And that is the band, this is no surprise, so this is not like breaking news, but the band are purposely being as tight-lipped as they possibly can be. They are very, very aware of how hyped up the fans are for this thing, that fans are looking for every little tidbit, and so we don't have anything because they are purposely making sure that nothing gets leaked. If you guys saw Portnoy's Instagram, Joe, I'm sure you did, he took that picture, I believe, is yesterday or the day before, with the big whiteboard behind him, and everyone's trying to decipher what's on it. Some people were trying to count. They said it was a song list and everything, but that, from everything we can gather, what we've been told, is basically just a song chart. So,
which is normal for most studio projects and is definitely old school. I mean, I think we've all seen insert name of DVD and Dream Theater. I made the joke earlier, but, you know, this one applies too. You know, eventually there has to be a matrix on the whiteboard of, okay, so are the drums done? Are the guitars done? Because everybody needs a checklist, right? So you know what you're there to work on that day. And for my money, what I have seen, those are probably code names, if they are anything, right? Like, are they really going to tell us the names of the songs with a returning founding member on the way back? Of course they could, but for me those are code names, because everybody's got code names until the lyrics are done.
And the list, it's very blurry, so you can't make anything out, but it's clearly a chart. It's not like a, hey, here's track one, here's track two, here's track three type of thing. And also, it's Portnoy. I mean, right. If anybody's, I mean, you know he's throwing in purposeful Easter eggs that aren't actually Easter eggs. So,
always appreciated, because we're bringing the whole shtick back, right? Like, everything's coming back, even his hatred of drum solos.
Yeah,
we love him for. Are you as excited about it? See, I always have a hard time with this, because as a fan, you want the founding members, or what you view to be the core of the band, to always be there, and when they're not, it feels weird. I wonder if Mike Portnoy coming back is as big for the diehard Dream Theater podcast host as it is for somebody who listens to the band. But I generally think Mangini did a good job, and I was sad to see him go, but more of him not knowing that he has like a big job, because Mangini's the man when it comes to, you want the drums played well. But it is a big deal for Portnoy to come back, right? Like, this is a huge deal for you.
It is. I think, you know, we've talked about this on the show before. I think it's excellent for the longevity of the band. I think it adds, you know, a certain, you know, kind of new energy to it. You know, anytime a band goes down the road of nostalgia, which this is not one of those. It's not like we were, you know, broken up for 20 years, now we're back, whatever. You know, it's not like the Van Halen, David Lee Roth thing where, you know, they went from 1984 to 2007. But there is that nostalgia to it, you know, for those of us who were there during the Portnoy years, especially for those fans that were there early in the Portnoy years. And, you know, fans like them, you know, and fans like myself went 13 years without Portnoy. But we've also been, you know, sorry for the pun, along for the ride the entire time. There was really no other better way to phrase that. I wasn't even trying to do that. But, you know, we've been along for the ride the whole time. So it's awesome because you kind of get to relive, you know, it's kind of like going back in time. It's like having a time machine, be like, God damn, you know, I remember going to see Train of Thought. And I remember, you know, being at all these different concerts with Portnoy and everything. So for in that respect, it's really cool. Again, I think that, you know, the new record is going to have an incredible energy to it that, you know, the records haven't had in a while, not because they haven't like tried to do that or anything, but dude, you're a musician yourself. So you know how it is when you get back in a room with somebody that you've got chemistry with after a long time, things just tend to explode, you know,
100%. Absolutely.
And so I think you're going to hear that. And this is one of the things that we're going to bring up as we go. But, you know, I wanted to talk about, you know, some of the fan boards and talk about some messages there. And someone said today, which to me was an incredible thing, one of the comments was that he was disappointed that it seems like they're already through half of the recording of the record because he wanted them to take a lot longer, you know, because he doesn't feel like it's going to be as good because they just like kind of, you know, did it quickly and immediately. And I'm like, man, like, I disagree with that. Like, if you're rolling and if you're firing on all cylinders, like, again, Joe, you as a musician, you know, usually the very best stuff you write is the stuff that you write the quickest when it just hits you and it absolutely flows. And if that's what's happening to them and they've just absolutely ripped out 8 to 10 just killer Dream Theater tracks in 2 weeks because they were feeding off that energy, I would much rather have that than them sitting there being nitpicking every note and being meticulous. Like, no, go with that energy, man.
And for it to not be perfect will actually be a different change of pace, right? Because Dream Theater, from their view at least, they've never put out something that's broken, right?
Yeah.
It's always, and maybe to a fault, it's always perfect in the studio. Not saying it doesn't deserve that, but, you know, with music going the way that it is, there's always this circle between the, it's super technical and it's super in the box. And then this year, the artists are just going to start doing things raw again.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in a Dream Theater raw record,
which
would ultimately sound like what they did with Liquid Tension Experiment.
Yes.
For some of those tracks, which were just live in the studio. And as good as they are, I don't want to compare it to Metallica, but they've been around nearly as long, and it applies. When your rehearsals are effectively in the studio, you can get away with just recording that.
Exactly.
And then that could be the big return. Maybe that, I don't think that's what it is, because see previous statement about the grid. But
right.
But to get in a room together and have it, I would love to be a fly on a wall for, okay, this groove is in 7/8, and then we're going to add an 11 and then take it to 4/4 for a while and see what everybody comes up with. For that to be the thought process, which I imagine it is for Dream Theater at times, they could probably pull some stuff off that the rest of us would have to think about, at least from a riff writing perspective.
Totally. Yeah, and I think, you know, I think one of the things that definitely, you know, sets Dream Theater apart from other progressive bands, especially in the Mangini era, or excuse me, the Portnoy era, is there is that little bit of a rock feel to it. There is that, you know, like you said, it doesn't have to be perfect. It's, you know, it sounds like a rock band playing the most incredible prog metal you could ever think of. You know what I mean? Like, and I think there's really something to be said for that. And I think for that reason, I mean, I've said it before and I will say it again. I'm going to be shocked if this album is not a top five Dream Theater record in their career. You know, I think, you know, I think back to a record like Distance Over Time. And I mentioned that it sounds like maybe it's a weird record to mention, but you know, that, you know, Portnoy had left in 2010. They did, you know, a dramatic turn of events. Then they did the self-titled and people were on board. But, you know, you could tell there was still, you know, we all know that the fan base was a little bit like, all right, man, it still feels weird without Portnoy. But they're, you know, they're getting into it. They're trying to do their thing. And then The Astonishing comes out, which is where, you know, I'll start, you know, when we talk about the fan boards and ask some questions of all the people in the chat, which there's a bunch of comments I want to get to, by the way, Joe. But and The Astonishing was so goddamn polarizing. And with Distance Over Time. GG3, you jinxed it, John. Now it's gonna suck. I'm telling you, I put my money where my mouth is, dude.
Listen, you can't blame John if it's bad, but he will certainly take credit if it's good.
No, you know what, dude? No, I will own up to it. If it's not a good record, I will own up to it. I was about to say I'll do 10 gorilla farts in the first hour of the fan hangout this year, but I'm like, yeah, but if people really don't like it and I do 10 gorilla farts in an hour, basically the fan hangout's going to be an hour and then Brian's going to be watching me like pass out.
I'm going to bed. But, see you guys later.
Yep. But yeah, so I mean, like, you know, The Astonishing comes out and it was so polarizing. And I feel like Distance Over Time, you know, they went out to Yonder Barn, they lived together, and for a month they like, you know, ate, slept, and breathed the music, but also each other's company. You know, they were doing, you know, the bourbon thing and the barbecue thing. And there's an energy to that record that they hadn't had in a very long time. And it shows. The songs are excellent. You know, we can debate this all we want to, but for me, that is, you know, I like, you know, all the Mangini records, but Distance Over Time for me is by far the best of them, personally for me. And I think it's because of that energy. And I think that that energy is going to show on this new record with Portnoy as well for that same reason, you know? So
you're missing some good comments over here. I'm seeing some stuff from JG3 and Kale's trying to stir the pot a little bit.
Let's do this first. I do have to read something here. So, Sean Faust, I love you, man. He sent me his list of stuff. He's selling a few like kick-ass things. So he has an Awake CD insert. It's got doesn't have Kevin Moore's autograph, but it's an original Awake CD insert autographed by everybody else. So you've got LaBrie, Petrucci, Portnoy, and Mae Young. So obviously Mae Young is, you know, the guy barely speaks. So you've got that, and he's got an Images and Words flat signed at the Awake release at Tower Records in Paramus, New Jersey. And that one's not specified, so I'm guessing that's including Kevin Moore. So, so again, an Awake CD insert autographed by everybody but Moore. That's an original. And then an Images and Words flat that was signed in 1994 at the Awake release party at Tower Records in Paramus, New Jersey. He says, best offer plus shipping. Give them my email. It's seanfaustmusic@gmail.com. That's S-E-A-N. faustmusic@gmail.com. So helping out my amazing buddy Sean Faust. Sean, I would like to reiterate the fact that Kingdom of the Crystal Skull is fucking kick ass. So getting to the comments. JG3, this is a good thing to mention. He says, speaking of Mangini, he released a video of him playing the drums on A View from the Top of the World on his YouTube channel, and it's great. The drums on that song are sick. Johan Alexanderson, great to see you, brother. He says, Mangini did amazingly, but after seeing the John Petrucci show, definitely wanted Portnoy back since then. I think that's an interesting comment to talk about, Johan, for a second, and we'll move on to other remarks in the chat. But I don't know if you saw any of the Petrucci solo shows, Joe. Did you see him solo when he was on tour with Portnoy on drums?
Not recently, but I was able to catch the first G3 he did, where he did his solo stuff with Satriani and Steve Vai back in the day. And I was surprised that not only was Mike Portnoy playing drums, but he wasn't playing the Portnoy drums.
Like, yes.
The show was not there for me. Later, when I buy the DVD, of course, it was the Japan show, I believe. Mm-hmm. But still, at the time, you have this perception that when artists have their own solo projects, it's always them with a different band.
Yeah.
So right away, I get the idea, okay, they're not just making music together in Dream Theater. These guys are buds. You know,
yeah.
ignorance of the teenage mind. Okay, these guys are friends. Like, they like playing music together.
Sure.
So when Portnoy initially left, and everybody likes to talk, I always kept that note in the back of my brain of, if he shows up with Petrucci, they're still friends. It's probably a business thing at that point, not a we're mad at each other thing.
Yeah.
So I wasn't surprised when I heard he was still playing with him. I thought, okay, this is great, because this means the door is still open.
Yeah.
For what, let's be honest, nobody really knows why he took a break. We know what we've been told, and we know what we think, but if they're still playing music together, it can't be a bad blood thing to me. So I think it's a positive thing that not only is he coming back, but it's a positive thing that you see them still playing music together. Because it's not that John Petrucci can't find somebody to show up and play his solo music. He wants his friend to do it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, like, I saw, Brian and I saw the Petrucci solo show on the most recent tour. And, dude, there was an energy there that was palpable. You know, regardless of whether it was just, hey, man, like, you know, it's old friends playing and we haven't gotten to do this in so long, you know, whatever. It was definitely something that you were like, wow, okay. And, you know, for fans of Dream Theater who, you know, like myself, I could never tell the difference between the Portnoy and the Mangini eras. I was like, it's all great music to me, dude. Like, they're both incredible drummers. But that was the night when I got it. Like, I understood the difference. Like, Mangini is a little bit more of you know, a technician, great feel and everything like that. Whereas Portnoy, again, he brings that rock edge. He's got that, like, fly by the seat of your pants every now and then type of vibe. And so, yeah, like, I think I can, like, I wasn't watching that show going, oh, I hope that Mike Portnoy comes back to Dream Theater. But I understand why there's a huge segment of the fan base that, you know, sides with Johan and says, yeah, when I saw that show, I'm like, hey, dude, I want Mike back in the band, Portnoy. So, you know, I understand it. I understand it. So I think that's, you know, I think that's awesome.
And after all that time, there's a vibe that fans want, let's be honest. You know, if Geddy Lee took a break from Rush, everybody wants Geddy Lee to come back to Rush. So we all want Mike Portnoy to show up and play his extremely technical drums, but do it in that slightly sloppy way that he does, because it's real.
Exactly.
Yes, Mike Mangini is a full-on, heavy-hitting technician of extreme, complex, every word you can say, drumming. Yep. But we don't. But maybe that might be the that might be the chink in the armor of the Dream Theater fan of, yeah, it's complex, but we want it to be a little sloppy, and only Mike Portnoy can do that, or at least get away with it.
Sure. Yep. Well, Doug McCauley says, by the way, great to see you, brother. Appreciate you tuning in again. He says, sounds like they're inspired. Kale with a great point. A lot of people in the chat are agreeing with him. Says, if you're on a roll, usually it's for the best. And you know what? If they get it done this quick, that makes more time for another, in my opinion. Kale, that is like the most positive thinking I could imagine. That's beautiful. JG3, speaking of Geddy Lee, to your point, Joe, he says, Geddy Lee talked about they wrote the song Far Cry in a single day. It's the lead single off of Snakes and Arrows. It's probably the best song on the record. Chastity Crawley, awesome to see you as always. Hope you're doing great. You and the husband. Tell Melissa what's up. She says, Portnoy to me just screams Dream Theater. I have nothing against Mangini, but I freaking named my dog after Portnoy. James LeBrie, Mike Portnoy, John Petrucci, John Myung, and Jordan Rudess are the major Dream Theater power lineup. So, yeah. All right, Kale, you know what?
No doubt. Oh, you found it finally?
Kale, you're going to get booted from both. I'm not going to bring it up because I don't know how many people know what Purgle are, Kale, but you're going to get banned from the chat on both shows.
Well, you might be upset that you read Sean Faust's message if you keep looking.
I have to scroll down. Chastity Crawley says, if the out my whole comment about the 10 gorilla farts, she says, it really will be drinking into infinity. Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, believe me, Chastity, that will be a finite wall. There will be no infinite drinking in that evening.
Yep. So, all right. Sean, seriously, you're going to do that? I plug your shit? Like, oh, my God.
I'm out.
All right. Sean is saying that I mispronounced.
As I can go.
All right. Sean is saying that I mispronounced. Is it Paramus? That's all right. Sean, don't even give me that shit because I live in Ohio. It's nothing but Indian counties and stuff like that. I will put them up on the screen. You'll never be able to pronounce them. So, all right. So, Kale says, Metal Injection posted 6 hours ago that the set lists may go back to being varied with Mike Portnoy at the helm. Thoughts?
That was always his thing, right? How many times have I heard him say, yep, because I make new set lists every single night?
Real quick, JG3 just said the new Bruce Dickinson solo record's really good. Sorry, Jay, it is not. I hate to disagree with you, but it's boring. Anyway, and it's even got my name in it, for Christ's sakes. Anyhow, all right, so yeah, I'm with you. Like, yeah, that was his thing. But, you know, he's been very vocal about saying, you know, that he... If they want me to do that, cool. Like, I don't know where I stand. Like, I have to fit back into everything. It's been 13 years. But then he did do that interview a couple days ago. And he said, yeah, you know, we've talked about that a little. And I did do that. And they've mentioned certain things they'd like me to start doing again that I did before. So I would be JG3. Kick rocks, John. Oh, Jay, I love you, man. I love it. He says, it rocks. No, dude, it's slow. It's boring. It's like a matter of life and death, that Maiden record, which is just mid-tempo. It's a nap. Anyway, but that I'm glad that you like it, dude. Anytime there's more good music, like... I don't think that there's a single Dream Theater fan, correct me if I'm wrong here, Joe, that would disagree if we were told, hey, the set lists are going to be different every night. I don't think there's a fan that would disagree with that. I think every fan would be like, hell yeah, dude, let's see some cool shit. Like, you know, I mean, dude, I remember going to shows not knowing what I was going to see. I mean, I've told the story on the show. On the Systematic Chaos tour, I saw them in Columbus on a Friday night and Cleveland on the very next day on Saturday. And it was an entire Dream Theater show in two nights, and there were only three common songs. So I saw basically 5.5 to 6 hours of Dream Theater with only three repeats. Like, how can you fucking beat that?
Isn't that the club mentality of any band, right? Because when you're playing local shows and you're locking in 10 or 15 or 20 songs because you got to play 2 or 3 hours, how long can you get away with just playing those songs, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if you're always changing it up, number one, it keeps you fresh. It keeps the band fresh. It gives every fan a different experience so that you know if this is your only show this year or the only show in your life, it's the only time we're going to play it. And it's the only time it's going to sound like this.
Yep.
And no shame, especially to the big name acts who are really there to put on a big show. You know, I was lucky, privileged, dragged along to however you view this, to one of the last Kiss concerts, or what, as of today, is supposed to be one of the last Kiss concerts. Because let's be honest, it's always well possible. Phrased. So if it is, great. I'm happy I went. Because what I learned was that Kiss puts on a really good show.
Yeah.
Then researching, I found out that, yeah, they put on a good show. This is their last tour. And they're going to do this show every single night, every single show, every single city, so that everybody gets the exact same thing. No shame in that. You've been doing this a long time. But for Dream Theater, it's trying to create that unique experience. And as long as you can do that, that's what the fans want. Yeah, I want to go see Metallica. I know they're going to play Enter Sandman. Do I want them to play Enter Sandman? Yes. And I know they're going to do it. If there was a possibility they weren't going to play it, I don't know that I'd feel the same way. I don't know how I feel going to see Dream Theater, John, and not knowing that It's a Jam is going to come out. Because I need It's a Jam in my life.
Right.
It's one of my core requirements now. But as a fan, you're going to get a unique experience every single time. So why not give that if you can?
Yeah.
It's a reason to say it's one of the best bands out there. Because not only do they have really complex shit, albums and albums and hours of it, but they have to know how to play all of it at the drop of a hat.
Yeah.
Good luck.
Best of luck to you. Best of luck to you.
Oh, you want to be the new drummer? Well, you got your shit to work through, don't you?
Yeah.
And he did.
Yep.
And he was a beast. But Mike's coming home.
But to your point, though, dude, Kale makes an awesome point. I mean, Kale, you are spot on tonight. And by the way, Kale, you forgot to put all your album details in the chat so I could put them up on the screen for you. Kale says, actually, you know what? Variation in the set list. Oh, that pretty girl is shaking. Joe has the cutest dog in the world, guys, and that was his dog. Kale says, actually, you know what? Variation in the set list could actually be good for LaBrie, too, if done right. Like, hey, man, I really feel like I'm up to voices tonight, but we might need to stay low tomorrow. Kale, that is an absolutely unbelievably prescient, incredible point. I think that is like, I think that's exactly what they should do. You know, I mean, like right now I'm writing a set list for our show on Saturday, and I know I'm nowhere near Dream Theater, so please no one listening think I'm saying anything like that.
That's not true. I have video evidence. Don't listen to him. He's lying.
Again, my ass. but like I've had like this weird cough and like phlegm thing going since like the first week of January, and it's affecting, like, I sound fine, but then I start singing and the high notes go, and it's the weirdest thing. It's a muscular thing. It's whatever. So I'm writing the set list with the songs that I know are not going to be affected by my vocal condition. But then I have a list of quote unquote extras, which is, you know, the bangers in the higher range. So that if I'm feeling it, I'm like, I'll go guys like on the fly, like, yeah, hell, let's do Separate Ways by Journey. Like, here we go. You know, let's do the, you know, songs like that. Like, and so Kale, I think that is a absolutely fucking awesome point. So
had not that considered that's on me, because yeah, thinking back, James probably can't do Pull Me Under every night.
I got to pull this up. Sean Faust. Sean is one of those people I mentioned when I talk about people who've been there from the beginning. Sean says, I saw Dream Theater in 1997 at Birch Hill Nightclub in New Jersey. And they were doing the acoustic thing, which, by the way, I can't even tell you how jealous I am of that, Sean. He says, there was a sign on the door saying, if you came to hear Pull Me Under, you're shit out of luck. See, that would get me into a band even more.
Please tell me that was signed Mike Portnoy.
Yeah, oh, you know it was, man. So, all right. So let's get into this whole like fan board thing.
Let's do it.
So I'm going to start this off with something that I said. So I generally have a rule. I don't go into comment sections on social media because it is the biggest goddamn cesspool of human existence you could ever imagine. You guys all know this.
Dude, I'm right here.
Oh, God. Oh, shut up. I firmly believe that anyone should be able to say anything they want online, no matter what it is, no matter how vile, no matter how offensive. But in order to have a social media account, you have to provide your actual name, phone number, and email address. So you can say whatever the hell you want, but there might be consequences, dude, like real world consequences. No more keyboard warriorism. So, I was, you know, on the Dream Theater Facebook page, like the fan page, someone had posted about The Astonishing, and I made the comment. I said, you know, I like this record. I said, to me, this is the most Dream Theater thing, you know, they've ever done. And, you know, people were being, and then some guy comes back at me, and he was like, first of all, the guy apparently couldn't read. He was like, you know, oh, you know, no, the most Dream Theater thing, they did most of their Dream Theater stuff in the first 20 years. I'm like, oh my God, that's not what I meant, you idiot. I didn't say, like, you know, when they did it. And then he's like, and then he, of course, proceeds to start ripping me and saying it's crap and it's this and, you know, it's vanilla. It's a shitty story. It's Disney. Nobody liked it. And it just really got me thinking about, you know, the fan experience and people online and the things that they say. And, you know, especially in relation to The Astonishing, it's so polarizing. And it's just one of those records. Again, you know, my amazing buddy, Robert Husted, who is getting married this summer. Congratulations, brother. I might be at the wedding. That show is still not confirmed.
Are you the wedding singer, John?
If he asked me to sing at his wedding, I definitely would.
Ask him, film it, put it on the internet.
Kevin Smith, good to see you, man. Thanks for tuning in. He says, John, like what you like. I do. It's just, you know, the way that, man.
He prefers that you like what he likes too.
No, it's not that. It's just the way that people shit on each other for this stuff is crazy. But,
It's nihilism for the sake of being nihilistic, right? Like,
yeah.
Like, you said this, so I'm going to say the opposite.
Yeah.
Because, like, yeah, let it go, guys. Come on.
So, basically, I was wondering what you guys thought. Because, you know, my comment saying it's the most Dream Theater thing they've ever done, to me, the reason that I say that is because, you know, Dream Theater is known as being ultra progressive, right? They're, you know, kind of like trailblazers in that progressive metal genre. You know, they, you know, ever since, you know, Scenes from a Memory, they kind of go outside the box. They're like, fuck the industry, we're producing our own records, we don't care about record sales, is that, you know, we all know the story of what and who they are. And to me, The Astonishing, first of all, I love the record, I love the music, and I love the story. So I mean, we got to start there. So I do have a predilection towards that record because of that. But I say it's the most quote unquote Dream Theater thing they've done, because it's 2017, in a year where, you know, digital music has taken over, it's streaming and downloading. You know, the attention span of the average music fan is at an all time low. You know, they write a story basically pissing on that. I mean, let's be honest. The Astonishing is basically John Petrucci going, "What the fuck, man? Like all these computers are taking away the human element." So you know, they write a story like that, just, right, you know, wrapped in a very nice musical bow. Again, musical attention spans are at an all-time low, and they put out a double concept record that's over 2 hours long. You know, it's basically a futuristic past. You know, there's like peasants and an emperor and stuff like that, which is, you know, not a very common theme. It's just... And they just went against the grain on so many levels. And I honestly, when they announced that project, I thought that that record was going to be like the ultimate Dream Theater record. I thought, and see, Sean Faust, exactly what he says, what if 2112 and Game of Thrones were a thing? Like, yeah.
Right.
Like, Kale McLeish. Jeez, Doug, you're sure you're a DT fan? That's way too mature a response. And what Doug is saying is, I personally don't like The Astonishing, but if you do, that's great. Maybe you're hearing something I'm not, or maybe we're all just different. That's beautiful, man.
You know, it reminds me of a conversation I had years ago with a wonderful, wonderful human being called Travis Turner when he was the host of As the Story Grows. And it was, hey, dude, thanks for introducing me to Canderia. Like, Canderia had that reputation for being progressive and heavy and funky and everything in between. But then they write this crazy story, this post-apocalyptic Manhattan control story. Like, it's 1984 in Escape from New York shoved together. And it's got its tragic points. And I think the reason most people don't like that sort of thing, or they don't at least attach themselves to it, is because they're not listening to music to watch a movie. That doesn't mean I don't like it. That doesn't mean you don't like it. That doesn't mean that we aren't here for the exact same thing when you're listening to a band like Dream Theater. But that is a problem I've always had when listening to this band, is it's not always clear when it's a story. and when it's we're just writing some good rock songs and some good metal songs. And you can't show up and play the singles off of your storybook record, right? That messes with most people. So I think that's one of the reasons why something like The Astonishing doesn't take. Because if I wanted to watch a movie or listen to, or watch or read a book or any variation in there, I would. I don't think most people really want that. Is that kind of Pink Floyd's fault and some of the classic bands who, yes, it was a story, but then we still write The Wall, part two?
Yeah. I mean, is it like overestimating your fans? Like, I don't know. I just, dude, I really thought that, I will always think this, like when I read all the announcements about that record, I thought, man, that's the most Dream Theater thing they could do. And I still think that.
Yeah.
And I really thought the fans would get behind it. And I was very, very wrong. It's so polarizing.
It's over-delivering on what is the Dream Theater thing, right? You know you're going to get progressive, so let's over-deliver. Let's write a crazy, above the water concept that it's not just a little story, guys. It's an epic. It's Dream Theater trying to write an epic. I think that's what you want. But now you got to go see them play it live, and they're not going to just play it live. I think that's where it's a letdown for some.
Well, and yet, dude, Dan Russell, great to see you, man. Thanks for checking into the show, man. Hope you're enjoying yourself. He says, The Astonishing Live was absolutely incredible. Not sure if you attended, but went several times, and it was unlike anything they have ever done. It was leaps and bounds so much better than the album. It needed to be experienced live. Dan, yeah, I saw it actually twice. I saw it one of the first shows of the tour at the Chicago Theater, and then I saw it again in Lakewood, Ohio, which, ironically, a year after that, I would actually be working not 2 minutes up the road from there, and I'm working there currently. But it went from the Chicago Theater to the Lakewood High School Auditorium, which was just a crazy experience. But I completely agree with you. It was, you know, the way the graphics were done with all, you know, the, you know, there's video everywhere, and it was kind of almost like, I hate to say a 3D experience, but it was very immersive where the story was concerned. And yeah, I mean, Dan, I completely agree with you. I mean, it was amazing live. And I think a lot of fans, unfortunately, I mean, I think they painted themselves into a corner by not doing, like, you know, The Astonishing. And then, I mean, you can't really do more music after that, but they eventually did on that tour. But, I know for a fact a lot of fans, you know, that I'm friends with that said, I'm not going. I don't want to just see The Astonishing, or I don't like that record. You know, I'm not going to like, part of me wonders if there wasn't an opportunity on this tour. So, you know, I'll throw this out to the chat and to you, Joe. Part of me wonders, would it have made more sense to do that tour as two nights in each city and kind of like compress the tour into maybe, let's say, I'm just throwing a number out there, so don't crucify me, guys. I'm throwing this on the fly. Let's say 12.
Put these nails away.
Well played, sir. 12 to 14 cities, but you get two nights back to back in every city, and you know that one night is going to be The Astonishing, the other night is going to be a standard Dream Theater show. I wonder if they could have gotten away with that, because the people that love The Astonishing could have gone to the one, and then people who are like, yeah, I'm not a fan, could have gone to the other. I mean, do you think that would have worked? I mean, looking back, and the reason that I asked that, Joe, is because the beginning of that tour was very successful, but the attendance like tapered off as it went. So I'm thinking, if you do it like 12 or 13 times and you announce it that way, first of all, you've announced it's an experience. So even people that may not like it, they're going, okay, we're not recording this for a live DVD. We're not doing this again because it's too long. If you ever want to see this album live, you get 12 chances to do it. So, I mean, to you and to everybody in the chat, do you guys think that that would have worked if they would have done it that way instead of, yeah, the whole tour is this, like, you're not getting anything else, piss off?
I want to start by saying you mentioned it, and Dan Russell also said it in the comments. I'm actually shocked they didn't record it for a release. I have always been a fan of bands that want to deliver the experience. You absolutely should film that. You absolutely should release that. I don't think it's less special because you film it and put it on a DVD or a Blu-ray or a CD as the live performance. I don't think that takes away from anything.
I completely agree.
It's exactly why I used to criticize Tool shows. Because what did you hear about Tool? Well, it's all about the live show because they put the images up and it's an experience, it's an ambiance, it's a vibe. Okay, well then where's the video of that? I want to watch it. And today you could. I don't think we're that far off from having multi-screen home setups from a technology perspective where you could potentially sit in your theater and watch The Astonishing on multiple screens and get the whole room vibe. We're not that far away. Stuff's getting really cheap. I'm not rambling, I promise. I don't know that it would have worked when they did it, but we have a precedence for it now. Now we have Metallica going on multi-night shows, and one of those nights you get to see Wolfgang Van Halen. And if you come on the right night, you get to see Pantera. But you're going to see Metallica both nights, and they're going to play different set lists, and they're not going to repeat any of the same songs. So you've got some incentive to buy a ticket to both nights.
Yeah.
On one hand, it's responsible from the artist to the audience, because now you're not just playing for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours, killing everybody's ears in the process and wearing yourself out. On the other hand, a band like Dream Theater, I think it would have worked to say, we're doing two nights. You can come to see the flip a coin experience, and we play the songs as we want to, and there is no plan. You're going to get a different set list. But if you want tickets for The Astonishing, we're going to do that too. I do think they missed out on an opportunity not recording it and releasing it in a full concert experience. Because
100%
anytime
agree.
you have a progressive band like Dream Theater, some of my favorite concert DVDs are Opeth. Because what you're seeing is that vibe, but you're feeling it live. And they could have done it. So I think that's where they failed. You already paid for the space. Let's put some cameras out there and get a board mix and see what happens.
Right. Well, and I think you made an excellent point earlier when you talked about, like, you know, they're there for a concert, not to watch a movie or whatever. But that would have been the perfect opportunity to make that live album. You know, you don't even have to release it on audio. I mean, you can, but what's the point? You're just doing the record, you know, in order. Release it as like a Blu-ray only thing where you actually do make it like the story, you know, have the animations going with the band, like make it like a movie.
Right.
You know, it's like, I've always thought that
are you
movie...
ready for the most basic comparison I can come up with, John?
Sure.
Have you watched Fantasia in your life?
I have.
Do you like Fantasia?
No.
Do you know people that like Fantasia?
I'm related to one who is my very best friend on the planet. I happen to co-host a nerd podcast called The Nerd Herder Council with him. His name is AJ Drake.
I bring it up because what is Fantasia when it was released? It's a symphony with visuals. It's an evening at the theater listening to the symphony play, and you get visuals to tell the story with you.
Yes.
It absolutely would have worked if they had done it that way.
I'm sorry, Doug McCauley. Is Fantasia a stripper?
It's somewhere, I'm sure.
That's awesome. Anyway, sorry.
She wears tails. Tights and tails.
Right? Oh, my God.
All right, it would have worked. It's a missed opportunity, I think, to not film that and say, well, if it doesn't work, we at least got a recording and we can put it out and our diehard fans will buy it.
Dude, I think they will. I mean, why would they not? I mean, you know, and you know, let me bring up the comment here. I had it on the screen, but let me. Yeah, so So Dan Russell said, I don't think they could have pulled that off from a physical standpoint. Way too demanding. It also would have exposed the poor attendance and support of the Astonishing. See, Dan, that's what I was mentioning, though. I will disagree there, because that's why I said 12 to 14 cities, because I think, you know, and I think it was Kale or somebody mentioned it later in the comments that, you know, it was the constant, you know, we're only doing the Astonishing. They announced the second leg of the tour and it's only the Astonishing. Like, well, shit, dude. Like, okay, we're still doing that.
Yeah.
I think if you limited it, Dan, to 12 or 14 cities, and again, say this is the only time we're doing this, even the people that don't like it, I think there are Dream Theater fans that are nerdy enough that will go, you know what, I got to at least see it so I could say I was there. You know, I mean,
you're looking for the comment right below from Kale. He laid it out perfect. Act one, some classics on night one. Act two, some classics. You know, that's what I'd love, like with that, kind of like Harry Potter, you know.
Yeah.
The Cursed Child in two parts.
Yeah. I get that, but it's a dividing line, though,
for fans of the band, because everybody has, the more time you invest in a production as a viewer, as a fan, the more lines are drawn in what everybody's willing to tolerate. I would much rather go to the theater all day. If it's an 8-hour production, I don't care. I will endure that to get the entire story in one shot.
Yeah.
Other people want to come back tomorrow and take a break, but I don't think you have enough of a definitive. You don't have a perfect audience at that point. It's going to go in either direction, and you're not going to satisfy anybody. What you suggested, John, I think is the most. It makes the most sense. And again, this year we have a precedence for it. You've got more and more bigger acts that are doing two nights and making a big deal out of it, that it's not the same show every night.
Yeah. Well, all right. So let's get into just a little bit of, you know, message board or fan board, whatever the hell you want to call it, stuff here. By the way, JG3, I completely agree with you. He says, you know what? They need to release a Blu-ray version of Score. Amen to that. Holy crap.
I'll sign up for that.
Dude. And by the way, Jay, you're not going to get me to say it.
Say it.
So, I mean, this is some of the goofy stuff that's on the board. Like, there's a dude who posted, they are called Dream Theater with ER at the end. So many people spell it with the RE. Regardless of how to spell in Europe, the band spells it with ER. So that's how it's spelled. Like, well, I mean, did you have to, like, I mean, you know. And
have
one
you ever
of the
caught yourself saying the phrase, I love Dream Theater? I don't think you have, John.
if AJ was here, he'd say Theater, and Brian would pronounce it even worse. Oh, so
dude, wait, give me a second. I'll pull up the soundboard, and AJ can be here with us if you'd like.
Yeah. Let's not do that. Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, some of these board comments are just like, man. Yeah,
what are we looking at over here? Is it all debate about Portnoy coming back?
No, it's not.
Why is that a debate?
You know, it's the comment sections of things. You know, like I'm trying to scroll through here and find one that was. Oh yes, okay. So here's one. So yesterday there was someone posted a video of Mangini trying to play some Latin stuff. It was at a modern drummer thing, and this guy, you know, guy, girl, whoever, I can't really tell. I didn't Facebook creep him.
It's not a guy.
Is this creepy? Well, yeah, right. You're so biased, John. He said, "Let's never forget the secondhand embarrassment that they can't even type. Let's never forget the secondhand embarrassment was this modern drummer performance. Seems like a child trying to play Latin music. Just stop." And it's Mangini playing Latin stuff, and this is like from years ago. And first of all, he's playing on a left-handed kit. He's a right-handed player. We know he's ambidextrous in every way, right?
Right. It's part of his shtick.
Yeah. But the comments are just some of the most, like, it's crazy.
I want to level with everybody right now just a little bit, if you don't mind, John. Yeah, you don't need to cut me to a single, but, you know, I do need to level with everybody.
Okay.
Your top performers, your top players, your top vocalists of all genres and all backgrounds, the time you saw them, the time that they were recorded, and it sounded better than it ever did, the amount of work and the amount of prep it takes to pull that off is as much as the most difficult thing you have ever done. And yeah. If you were one of those people, you know what I'm talking about. I bring it up because if Mike Mangini shows up and he's not having a good day because he just, you know, wrecked some Dream Theater last night and his wrist hurts, I'm going to give him a break for impromptu not being able to just flip the switch into Latin drum mode.
Yeah.
I'm going to give him a break because that's not usually his thing. We can't all be on at the exact same time, so give the guy a break. Like, again, we mentioned it earlier that we're looking for stuff to criticize now, you know, when you say something like that to me.
Well, and here's a comment underneath it. I mean, to your point, there's 1,000 more impressive drummers who can play salsa, conga, and all that things. As usual, bored. Okay, first of all, my response would be, all right, name me the 1,000 players. Okay, and to your point, yeah, maybe he is tired and stuff like that. And yeah. I would go along with that. But I would also say, it's Mike Mangini. You're going to tell me he doesn't know how to play that stuff? Like, maybe if you're actually of Latin heritage and stuff, you've heard, like, the original type stuff? Right. Like, okay, yeah. Like, seriously.
If you need a badass mambo back in the day, you call Tito Puente, right?
Yeah, like, exactly, like, exactly.
Do you think Tito Puente is going to call Mike Mangini? If he did, I want to see that. I want to hear that. Like, Mike, I need the greatest mambo ever, and you're the only guy who can use both hands in unison, so I feel like you can pull this off. All right, Tito, if that's what you want, I'm going to make this happen.
Yep. Dude,
give him a break, you know.
And he's Mike Mangini. You know, it sounds good. I mean,
it's
not
Mike Mangini.
Exactly.
You know he can play it with one hand, so he's trying to use both for the sake of symmetry, right?
Yeah. Dude. So okay, this is funny. This is a live reaction. So as I'm going through these comments, a buddy of mine is commenting and shitting on, like, this is hilarious. This is I've actually co-hosted the Classic Metal Show with this guy, Joe Cleon. He's an amazing photographer here in Cleveland. He's a very he's done all the main bands.
Shout out to guys with cameras, man.
Oh,
they know,
dude,
what they're doing.
Joe is one of the best photographers you will ever see.
Very guy's opinionated. Name Joe, just they got it going on, man. I'm just saying.
Guy's name Joe, they got it going on. But yeah,
guy's name John, they write lots of songs.
Yeah, right. I mean, even he's in this comment section. It's just like, and here's a perfect one. Like someone commented, like I said, some of you do not realize he's playing left-handed. And another person, as a matter of fact, he's playing both left and right-handed. Like it's, oh my God, it's so good. Like it's, you know, but why would you go in there and like crap on that? So,
right.
You know, it's, I don't know. I don't get it. And there's some amazing stuff in here and there's some great comments, but oh my God, it's, you know, I'm trying to, there was one guy that just absolutely just annihilated the band. And I'm like, what the hell for? Like, and it had some terminology that I wanted to bring up to you.
Yeah. Hit me.
Because I don't know what the terminology means. It was, I'm trying to find it, but it was like, I'm, you know, I hope they do something different instead of the RLRLRLKKKK, something like, I'm like, what the hell
right,
are
left,
you talking?
Right, left, kick, 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 kick.
Well, I that's what I thought too.
You know, the warm-up shit.
Yeah, and he was like, yeah, it's all they do or something. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I just did not. Oh, here it is. Okay. All right. So let's read this. And you guys in the chat, like, okay, like, give me your opinions on this. Oh, is that Joe Gebhardt? Oh, Joe, what's up, buddy? Good to see you, Joe Gebhardt. Joe, we are just riffing on Dream Theater topics. I'm actually going through the Dream Theater Facebook page, the fan page, and I'm bringing up some stuff that people talked about. So I don't understand this. This is the kind of snob shit that gets me. Like, perfect example, AJ and I, my brother AJ, we do the Nerf Herder Council. We have a Star Wars trivia team. We call ourselves the Aluminum Falcons. Those of you who are into Star Wars will get the reference. And prior to last night, we were 11-0 in official Star Wars trivia
competitions. Who failed? Was it you or AJ?
Well, no, what I was about to say was after last night, we are now 12-0. But the hosts messed up a couple of the answers because they just pulled them straight off the internet. And we went up afterwards and we're talking to the hosts. And they said, we are never doing Star Wars again because Star Wars fans are such dicks. We got hollered at. We got this, that, and the other. And I was thinking, dude, that's exactly like these Dream Theater message boards. Like the way people shit on each other. It's like, for what? So this person...
Let me ask you a question, John, that is off topic by design, but not because we're having a Dream Theater conversation. What does the non-Dream Theater fan want this band to do? Do they want them to get a new singer? Do they want John Petrucci to double up the guitars more than he already does and write gent riffs? Like, what do you want from this band if you're not a fan? Because if what the non-fan wants matches what the complainer on the message board wants, I think we can just move on and say, dude, find a new hobby. Find a new band to shit on because this isn't your band.
Yeah.
That's my question.
Well, Dude, again, I don't get it. Like, you're playing right into your point. Like, so this is kind of a lengthy post, but it's got 131 comments. This is what's your opinion on this topic? So this person posts, and I'll talk over the typos. If Portnoy and Jordan are taking a week off and Petrucci is tracking guitars, by the way, this is the post I mentioned earlier about the guy who's pissed off. It took a short amount of time. If Portnoy and Jordan are taking a week off and Petrucci is tracking guitars, that means that the new album songs are completely written for the most part. Maybe some improvised solos and drum fills are remaining to be done. I wouldn't say drum fills, but anyways, I hope that Portnoy's come.
Give him a break, folks. He's trying to edit someone else's bad writing.
Exactly. anyways, I'd hope that Portnoy's comeback would be written in more than a month or two to make the masterpiece everybody wants, not Metropolis Part 3. That's dumb. Well, that's your opinion. Like, let people want what they want, dude. But apparently the band took the same route as Train of Thought of being written in like 3 or 4 weeks. And at least for me, that's a little bit underwhelming since I don't want to hear old Dream Theater because the band has evolved a lot by now and more of the RLRLKK/RLKK and 3/4 polyrhythm accent gets boring after 13 plus years. That's what I loved about Mike Mangini. Yes, he had a very, very, very signature style and feel soul. But no signature fills, unlike Mike Portnoy. This makes every Mike Mangini fill and groove on each one of his songs is completely different and very unique. I'm just afraid of Mike Portnoy going into the old ways of making the band a shadow of their former selves. Dream Theater changed a lot since 2010. What's your opinion on this topic? My opinion, first of all, is that they've been doing the 3 to 4 weeks writing thing on basically everything since Train of Thought. They were writing in the studio. They started that, and please feel free to correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe back during the Falling Into Infinity stuff because they had all that stuff, the demos and stuff that got turned down, and they were jamming in the studio, came up with stuff then. And then, you know, I was just literally today listening to the making of Scenes from a Memory, Lost Not Forgotten CD on Amazon, and they were writing that in the studio. Then, you know, so they've been doing that forever. So, and this whole, I don't know what he's getting at with, like, you know, the right left kick kick, you know, right left kick kick, like 3/4 pot, like it's I don't how
let,
is
let
how
me
is
help
how
you,
is
John. Let me put it in context for you.
First of all, how is he hearing that they've been doing the same shit for you know, 15 years now or 25 years, whatever. That, like, what the hell is he listening to? That just sounds like an obvious bias, I think.
It is, and it's that thing I said earlier. That person is not listening to the story. They're trying to listen to the song. They're trying to listen and hear for the Pull Me Under or Metropolis Part 1. Or Panic Attack. Like, they're trying to find the one, like, single. And I feel like Dream Theater has always tried to get away from the single, but they can't deny what era they came up in. There's always going to be a single on the record. They've tried to get away from it. They really have, but it might be the most challenging thing for the listener. Is you can't just, especially today, you can't just sit down and scroll and find an Awake on here, or find a 6 o'clock. I might be listening to Awake right now. you're not just going to find that in this new record, but I think that there are many people that want that. Yeah, 2112 is a badass record, but the diehard Rush fans want a Tom Sawyer in there every once in a while. Amidst all the technical mastery, they want just a Tom Sawyer. And I think that Dream Theater fans that complain about the new album being written in less than a month are still looking for that. That's what I think. Yeah. Because what do you want? What you want, whatever they got. Because holy shit, these guys are back in the room together again. I don't care what it is. And I forget when you brought this up at the top of the show, but yeah, you're right. How much time you got to write that new album? Dude, if it's great, don't fuck with it. Just put it out. You know, fucking with it is what makes stuff live in the studio for a year and constantly have to try and refine the part. It's like, no, these guys got it. Yeah. If there's a Dream Theater thing, they've got it.
Yeah.
Write it, put it out. I'm in favor of that. I can't follow the complaints with this band, because even if I don't like the record, I know what I'm getting into. And what I'm getting into requires me to sit down and commit at least an hour of my life to listening to the album.
Yeah. Well, and it's I mean, dude, Dream Theater might as well be named Pizza, because that old adage, like, pizza, even if it sucks, it's good. Like, you know, even your least favorite Dream Theater record, if someone sat you down and said, you know, you could only listen to this Dream Theater record, you'd be like, damn it, this is my least favorite record. But would you listen to it and be like, oh, there's some cool shit on here? Like, yeah, you know, it's not what, you know, it isn't an experience with so many bands where the bad record is so goddamn bad, you know, where you're like, I can't handle this. I mean, it's, you know. And
you've heard me say this before. Like, there's some stuff at the end of Octavarium, and there's some stuff on 6 Degrees that, like, is a little wankery. But it's Dream Theater. For me, I don't enjoy it as much as you do. But I know what I'm in for. And, yeah, sometimes my least favorite Dream Theater record, I don't know what that is anymore, because they put out a lot of new albums in the past few years. But my least favorite still gets a spin every now and then.
That's true. All right. I got to call out Doug McCauley. Doug, he says, I wouldn't listen to a band named Pizza. Sorry. Okay. But Doug, what if Dream Theater, since 1985 was just called Pizza? And the entire career is exactly the same.
May I recommend a punk band called Bass Amp and Dano and their amazing single, This Ain't No Pizza Party, to anybody that doesn't want to listen to a band named Pizza? May I recommend a song about a pizza party? It's a good time. That's all I'm saying.
Dude, we had a band in Cleveland. It might still be around. A local band that was like the most... I never saw them. I don't know what they played, but I just know it was the greatest band name I'd ever heard in my life.
Was it Gatlin?
Well, no, obviously not. No, they were called 20,000 Leagues Under My Nutsack. And there was another one. There was another one that was JFKFC.
It's not supposed to be funny, but it's fucking hilarious.
Exactly. I'm like, so yeah, I actually never did listen to those bands, but every time I saw their stickers plastered around our practice space, like the, you know, the giant like apartment type.
They were here.
I was like, damn it. Like, let's do that. So let's get to some comments here about this. Like, dude, like,
it.
So Johan Alexanderson says the Jerk fans probably want an exact replica of one of the classic albums, but even if they got that, they would still complain. Yeah.
Oh, it's not as good as Pull Me Under was that one time.
Yeah. I mean, Johan, I completely agree. And by the way, guys, I should have said this, like, God, like it started the show when I said we were going to talk about fan stuff. I hope it doesn't come across as me like trying to pretend like I'm better than other fans or shitting on fans. Like, it's just, this is just my commentary on what I see, because I don't understand this mentality of this got to go against each other, can't have a conversation type of thing.
I love so much.
Yeah, like, I don't understand it. Like, it's unbelievable to me. Like, if you love it, then let's get into it. And if you're arguing with somebody about the band, you're arguing because you both love the band. So, like, come at it from a place of being cool, dude. Like, I will always compare it to Star Wars Celebration. It's, you spend a week around 150,000 other Star Wars fans, and all of you are in the best mood. And even if you have the polar opposite ideas on the movies, you're like hugging it up like bros, because you're like, dude, we both love Star Wars. And the world needs more of that. And so that's why I don't understand why these comment sections get into this shit. So,
I need to quote my wonderful co-host, you know, more than once tonight, and here it goes. If you don't like the new albums, that's okay. The old albums are still there. You can go listen to them anytime you want. We don't need to get in an argument over which one is better that actually ends in bloodshed.
Yes.
Right? We talk about these things because we love these things. But we get stuck trying to be right sometimes. And guess what, dude? If you love your classic Dream Theater, that's fine. If you love your modern Dream Theater, that's fine. If you love it all, I'm sure the band appreciates that. But let's be honest. They really want you to come see The Astonishing Live, which nobody wanted to do, according to you and the stories I've heard.
But that was
a little shocking to me.
So
They appreciate that, John, and I appreciate you being able to tell me about the experience.
Nice. But we'll keep that off air. But so Kim McLeish, she says, my opinion is that poster needs time to shut the fuck up and embrace everything that's coming. Doug McCauley says that perfectly explains the Dream Theater fan rift in a nutshell. The main personality quit, was replaced. A whole new generation of fans came up with Mangini, then bang, he was suddenly gone. I think that's the root of it.
I feel like Joshua Toomey said it best when he said Joe rules, by the way.
Where the hell's Toomey? Is Toomey in here?
Love you, man.
Look at this. Oh yeah, there he is. Toomey says, Star Wars sucks. Grow up, nerd. Oh boy. Joe rules, by the way. You know, it's a good thing that Toomey doesn't have a podcast of his own, you know, that I could promote and plug right here, because,
oh man,
you know,
I need to exit this conversation for a moment.
No, it's fine. I mean, it's fine. Like, now, if you want to go listen to Joshua Toomey, he does have a number of podcasts. And I will warn you though, Josh Toomey hates Pantera, especially Dimebag Darrell. He is like the world's biggest Dimebag Pantera hater you'll ever meet. So you can go look him up and jump in his comments and stuff like that. Actually, send him emails.
No, it's not.
Send him emails and tell him what an asshole he is for hating Pantera so much. That's what you guys need to do. Oh, he says, John rules too. Okay. All right. Never mind. Toomey has a bunch of awesome podcasts. And Toomey is to Pantera fandom what I am to Van Halen fandom and Dream Theater fandom. So, Toomey, I love you, brother. Thanks for playing along, dude. Seriously, guys, like, yeah. It's Toomey phrased it perfectly. I hate Dime as much as you hate Eddie Van Halen. Exactly. Oh, my God. Lee Walker, great to see you, man. Thanks for tuning in. He says, all I want on the new album is for them to lean into the heavier side a little more than the last few albums. This may be rehashing a point, but Lee, I really think that they are definitely going to do that. And strictly from the perspective of just the energy that, you know, they have going in there with Portnoy again, it's that, you know, we used the word earlier, the immediacy, you know, the energy of, oh my God, we're back together. And it's, I mean, I think that's going to happen organically. I don't think, Lee, that that's going to be something that they're going to, you know, consciously do, but I think it's going to be there. I mean, Joe and you guys in the chat, like, what do you think? I think it is going to lean towards being a heavier record, personally.
Organically, it's going to feel like the the brightest, most powerful energy the band has had in years, because it's going to be new. It's going to be the first time the group is back in the room together, and it's going to be organic. You know, a 12, 13 year break from songwriting, there's going to be something there. It's going to feel heavy, but I want to be clear, it's going to be awesome. I don't think it's going to be when I hear heavy, I have to make sure we're not just talking about guitar heavy, because you're not going to get guitar heavy from Dream Theater all the time. If you did, it's not going to be, you're not going to have Jordan Reedus in there just being a keyboard badass, right? Like, it's not going to happen.
You meant Reedus. I know you said Reedus, but
I'm blind, dude. I'm sorry. I've had this much whiskey tonight. Forgive me, John.
Nice.
It's going to be good. It's going to be good. It's going to feel awesome. And even if it doesn't, we're all going to be there at the start to say, and if it turns out to be their Saint Anger, I will be here to mock you for it, John.
It's
not going to happen, though.
Well, yeah, I don't think there's any way to make anything shittier than that unless you count Lulu. But
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Okay. As much as I love Kale, you believe that dude wants to actually jump on here and defend Saint Anger on a show at some point?
I believe he can, because everywhere but here, they kind of like it.
No.
I don't know why. When they play Europe, they open the show with Saint Anger and people like it. I don't know why.
It's shit. I don't care why. It's shit. It's just... It
Serenity.
Sucks, dude. Oh, God. Now make fun of me. Okay, there we go. Wait a minute. Okay, Joe, I need you to do this research. Doug McCauley says, Lulu is the best-selling Lou Reed album in history.
I'm on that now for you, sir. Just give me a moment.
Johan, I love you, man. I love you. Johan Alexanderson coming to the rescue. I'm European. I can confirm nobody likes Saint Anger over here. Johan, you are not my most favorite chatter. That
I
is amazing.
See editing is a thing when it comes to YouTube concerts, and somebody's trying to tell me the lie.
That is amazing. Cam McLeish, this is almost certainly true. Probably about the Lou Reed thing. Well, yeah, that's a whole nother topic. But anyway.
I expect Kale to know how to play the whole record just out of spite now.
Dude, Kale's amazing, dude. He's a really good songwriter, really good guitar player, really good. Like, he just excels at stuff, dude.
Except
for posting his album details in the chat so that I can read them live for people. Kale,
do it now, Kale.
For the love of God,
now.
I'm trying to get you sales, bro.
Seriously.
Come on.
Seriously, I need to know where to send the riffs to. Of course, I got that email covered.
Yeah. Shut up, dude. All right, so Joe Gebhardt says, I want heavy. I want the naturally flowing instrumental sections. I want the soaring guitars, and I'd like for them to be experimental again.
What do you mean by experimental?
Yeah, that was exactly what I was going to ask. And
what do you mean? What section of what song are you referring to?
Kale, message it to me on Facebook. I'm not seeing it in the chat. What by experimental, Joe? Let's expound on that. Like, what? So yeah, what are you looking for in terms of experimental stuff on the record? Now, as Joe is typing, I will say this: when I was listening to the making of Scenes from a Memory today, I will say that there's a whole bunch of tracks on there for anybody who hasn't listened to it. In terms of chronology, it came up on my Amazon as the most recent Lost Not Forgotten archive album that's out there. There was a ton of shit on there that I didn't even know was on the record. But when I listened to it, I was like, oh, God, you can kind of hear that sound. So, and there was a bunch of really weird stuff that I thought was just sound bites, but it was like Jordan, or a lot of it was Jordan. But then there were parts where Petrucci was doing some really wonky thing with his guitar. So there are those things that you don't really know are there. So maybe Joe's referencing stuff like that. So I don't know. Like, you know, Joe, I haven't asked you, and we'll get out of here pretty soon. Like, thank you guys for sticking around. This has been an absolute blast, man, just sitting here bullshitting Dream Theater for an hour and a half. But, Joe.
Hi. Welcome to your Dream Theater podcast.
Yeah,
where right. You talk about Dream Theater.
Well, but you know what, dude? We never just sit down. Like, normally it's a topic. It's very focused. And tonight it's, you know, like.
I have brought you chaos.
Yeah.
I'll take my $5 now.
Nice. All right. So.
Welcome to Discuss Metal into Infinity.
Why? I thought it was. Never mind. I was about to go to that other place. So
hi-o.
I know you're not like a huge Dream Theater guy, but you are a fan. So what would you like to hear? You get the new Dream Theater record, you know, late summer, early fall. You put it in. What are you hoping for?
I hope I don't hear Mike Portnoy's signature clicky bass drum.
Oh,
That's what I don't want to hear. I want to hear the vibe of the band take a 10 or 20 year, just take a jump back and remind everybody why they love this band. And when you're halfway through the record and the energy is high, just don't do the ballad. Keep the energy up.
So do you not,
I want the record to blow it. Go ahead.
Do you not want them to do a ballad, or do you just want the ballad like not sequenced earlier in the album?
That's what I'm saying. Just don't follow the same format. Don't even make it a story. I'll be honest. I don't need another story this year. I want the record to have the energy of 20 years ago, when the band when everybody was first getting into it. Most people were just getting into it. Late 90s, early 2000s, right? Mm-hmm. And they were trying to get their ears and their brain around this idea called progressive metal. I want that vibe. But I want Mike Portnoy to have an actual drum kit and not this fake clicky thing that he's been holding on to for the past 30 years. I get it. I get it, John. I get it's a thing. I really do. I just don't want to hear it anymore. I don't want to have this thunder cannon amazingness that is Mike Mangini, and we can make records now where the bass drum actually sounds like a bass drum, to turn into that thing that we all hear live, that triggered nonsense. I just don't want that in 2024. I just don't.
Doug McCauley's calling you. I said, Joe, do you even know how to DT, bro?
You have no idea how much I know how to DT, my
friend. That's amazing. DFT
indeed.
Oh, my God. Kale says, do the track 9 of 10. That would be the ballad. I love that with Wait for Sleep, Lifting Shadows, Spirit Carries On. Yeah, I think your, that's, yeah.
Your favorite Metallica record is Injustice for All, right?
Oh, dude.
It's my favorite example of what a track 9 should be, because that's when they do To Live Is to Die.
Yeah.
I love that as an example of... Well, it's a different kind of vibe, or it's a slower song, or you know, it's just something I want to do nice. Like, can you do it on track 9? Because I don't need it on track 3. It's not 1992 anymore.
Okay, well, I'll see your Injustice for All, and I'll raise you another day.
Ooh.
Like, I mean, that's
okay.
Now to your point though, that was, you know, only Uber prog nerds knew who Dream Theater was at that point. And so basically I say, here's a hit single. Now here's like, you know, the poppy radio-ish, like light rock 104, you know, fucking, you know. And
so in a world where James LaBrie has some pretty kick-ass solo material.
In a world.
Do I need
By the way, which is new... this world, James LaBrie has tons of awesome solo material.
That's
I
want to
get that out there.
Do I need another Dream Theater ballad?
Oh, nuts. God damn it. Why did we get into this now at like an hour and 23 minutes? Wow. You know what?
Do I need another one?
No, wait a minute. Yes. And I'll tell you why. Brian and I have said this for the entire history of the podcast. See, Murilo Alves, if I'm mispronouncing that, I apologize. Murilo Alves, thank you for tuning in, brother. Good to see you. He says you do need another ballad. And I will tell you why, Joe. Brian would agree with me 1,000,000% right now. James LaBrie is a phenomenal vocalist, absolutely world-class. But he shines on that ballad stuff, dude. So
he does.
I would love another Dream Theater ballad. I mean, dude, to this day, I listen to A Beautiful Shade of Gray, dude. It is like, that album is like so goddamn good. And it's because James is like right in his wheelhouse the entire time. So.
Right.
Oh, look at this. Okay, man, see. Man, oh man. We have
the rabbit hole has been opened, my friend.
Damn it. Doug McCauley, you can't just decide to move the goalpost. They've already done that several times. Never planned the track listing with the ballad and stuff. Cam McLeish says, I see you're another day, and then show you answer lies within where they slow too far down. Oh God. See, why did this all not come up within the first like 15, 20 minutes of the show? Cause now this is like a whole nother, like, oh my God. Oh my God.
I mean, if you want to take five, we can come back and keep going, my friend.
Part two.
And we're bringing it back to Dream Theater. God. How many discs do you want this time?
Yeah. Oh, my God.
It's going to be a five-part epic with 35 minute songs.
Dude, what if it was like a three-disc album with 11 songs? And it was like, you know what? Portnoy's back, and we're just going to do the most, you know, back then, like, we were doing, like, you know, six song albums. Like, yeah, well, he's back now. So we're doing a triple disc and it has seven songs. Welcome back, Mike Portnoy. You know,
we're doing Dream Theater, fuck you. It's only one song, but it's got nine movements.
Exactly. It's like, we're Dream Theater. Fuck you.
If that's not the name of the last album they ever do, I'm going to want my money back.
Right. Right. So Chastity says, ballads are what cinched James getting into Dream Theater. Totally correct, Chastity. Kale, dude, Joe, you've got a fan. Always have a fan.
Hell yeah.
Kale says, Joe, you are coming back next episode.
I'll let Brian know that now so that he knows to go on another cruise.
Get the fuck out of Big Boat.
And if I can get John to take the week off, Kale, we got this, right?
you guys can do it, man. It'll be like Kiss in you know, a couple of years. It'll be the Brian and John avatars.
Oh God, please don't give me permission to deep fake you.
Dude, I would love to see that, like, you have no idea. I can only imagine what that would look like.
Hey, Toomey, I need your help in a couple weeks.
Nice. Doug McCauley says, Kale, I raise you a goodnight kiss.
Oh, we're just stacking them now.
Doug says,
where's the whiteboard?
Dude, Portnoy said, or Doug said, I like it, but wow, Portnoy needed NyQuil for that track. Joe says, new Brian.
New Brian.
Oh, my God. This is crazy. All right, you guys got to contact each other offline, which I'm sure you have, but total off topic. Kale wants to know, Joe, how
season
you
season 7 episode Voyager? 3.
Okay. All right. That was a little Trek talk. I can't believe I did that. We don't hack Trek here. All right. It has been an hour and 28 minutes. There have been so many amazing people in the chat. Kale and Sean, Joe Gebhardt, Lee, I mean, JG3, all these amazing people, man. Johan Alexanderson, great to see you guys. To me, everybody. Guys, I got to get a couple plugs in here before we head out here.
Dude, you got to throw Doug's last comment on there.
Damn it, Doug. I was Doug McCauley says, I was there the night Brian got replaced.
He'll be back in about 13 years, guys. It'll be fine.
Right. Well, he's got so many trips and cruises to go.
He'll have this badass beard with like three colors in it. It'll be fine. Yep,
exactly. By the way, so Joe will be back on. I'm just going to warn you guys. So Joe and Brian and I are enormous fans of the Wolfgang Van Halen records, and we're going to be deep diving them. So if you guys don't like Wolfgang Van Halen or his music or Van Halen in general, first of all, you're wrong. Second of all, we will announce that ahead of time so you guys don't have to tune in. But we are going to be doing that. But Joe is definitely going to be back on the show. Joe is an amazing friend. I do have, again, as I said many times, my show, the Nerf Herder Council, and Joe is a frequent co-host on the show, and he does some amazing, super nerdy hangouts with my brother AJ on there. They're literally building Legos and bullshitting about the nerdiest stuff you can ever, ever, ever imagine. So it's, again, the show's called the Nerf Herder Council, and the shows they do are called WTF Fridays. So go look that up if you want to see.
Hell more. Yeah.
And nerd out. So before we go, I have to promote a few things. Number one, Kale McLeish. And Kale, I didn't see it in the comments. I'm so sorry. But don't forget to go hook yourself up with Kale's new record. It is called Too Long Between Drinks by his band Lines of Conviction. It's streaming on all the major services. It's 9 songs, covers a bunch of feel-good rock styles. The lead single, Open Hearts, is almost at 5,000 streams. So, guys, we got to get that at 10,000. So this is our new goal. In the next 2 weeks, we need to get Kale's single, Open Hearts by Lines of Conviction. We need to get that to 10,000 streams. So let's do that, man. Spread this everywhere because, guys, not just saying this because Kale's an incredible friend and our very first viewer, listener, fan of the show, whatever. The music is really, really good, man. Kale busted his ass on it. He was messaging me throughout the recording process and the songwriting process. It's really good, man. Like, if it wasn't full disclosure, I'd be like, hey, Kale's got a record out. Go check it out. But it's not like that. Like, it's really, really good. His band is great. So go check that out, guys. So, yeah, again, it is Too Long Between Drinks. That is the album title, and the band is Lines of Conviction. So check that out. And, again, our very good friend, Sean Faust. If you guys are looking for some autographed early Dream Theater memorabilia, he is selling an original Awake CD insert autographed by James LaBrie, John Petrucci, Mike Portnoy, and John Myung, and also an Images and Words flat signed at the Awake record release party at Tower Records in Paramus, New Jersey. Hopefully I got it right this time, but let's go see Sean pronounce Cuyahoga.
Paramus? Where?
Yeah. So, yeah.
Staples here?
So an original Awake CD insert autographed by everybody in the band at that time, but Kevin Moore, for obvious reasons. Kevin wasn't in the band anymore. And an Images and Words original flat signed at the Awake release party at Tower Records in Paramus, New Jersey. So he has those for sale, guys. You can hit him up at SeanFaustMusic@gmail.com. That's SeanFaustMusic@gmail.com. And he said just best offer plus shipping. And guys, full disclosure, the reason that Sean is telling these things, he is one of the most original Dream Theater fans you will ever meet. He actually worked for an animal shelter, and he has a bunch of shelter pets himself. And one of his best buddies, his furry buddies, needs a very expensive surgery. So he's selling things off to help his buddy get that surgery that he desperately needs. So not only are you helping, you know, not only are you helping, got him getting emotional. Not only are you helping an amazing pet, our buddy Sean's best friend, but you're helping Sean himself. You're helping another Dream Theater fan. So I feel like I'm going into sales pitch mode. I'm sorry, guys, but
oh, hang on. Let me put you on a single.
Yeah, no. But yeah, guys. So if you want that stuff, it's actually Sean's not just doing it to collect money. He's actually doing it to help, you know, save one of his best buddies. You know, Sean is an amazing guy. We keep a touch offline as do Joe and I, and he's just a beautiful person. So if you guys want to get that, hook him up. Again, SeanFaustMusic@gmail.com. SeanFaust. So excellent question, Kale. One last thing. Doug McCauley wants to know, how do I get an autographed Lines of Conviction? There we go.
Kale, I'm going to have to ask you, man. If this isn't on Bandcamp, I'm rioting. Because that number one, I need that lossless flack in my life. Number two, that's the place to sell the autographed Lines of Conviction. Just saying, if you need some help, I got your back, man. Hey.
All right, so I get a Murilo Alves. Again, Murilo, like, I'm glad you put this in the comments, but this is awesome, man. Thank you so much. He says, discovered this podcast recently, and first time I was able to tune in live. great job, and you can call me Bob if it makes it easier. That is amazing. So Bob Alves, Bob Alves, you know, so there we go. Thank you so much for tuning in, man. Hopefully you've enjoyed the episodes, the past episodes. That's awesome. So yeah. And usually, Bob, full disclosure, it's a little more focused. You know, we have a central topic, but tonight, you know, I had to do this on the fly, and there's nobody that can do it on the fly better than either Chris Aiken or my buddy Joe Wren. So I hit up Joe Wren. I'm like, we've had enough Chris Aiken for a while. So, you know, Joe, before we get out of here, I cannot thank you enough for jumping on the fly. Again, this was, guys, this was 100% on the fly. We were late jumping on because we had like audio issues and tech issues, and still pulled off the whole damn show. So plug all of your stuff before we jump out of here.
Man, anytime. You know, I tried to talk him into Wolfgang Van Halen tonight, guys and gals. It's not a guy-gal thing. And he insisted, like, no, we got to hold that for Brian. So, dude, absolutely, thanks for having me on. If you want to know where my, you know, current creations of madness can be found, there are two places you can go. You can go to discussmetal.com, where all of the podcasts are about your favorite heavy metal bands, my favorite heavy metal bands, all the topics and everywhere in between. In fact, there might be a two-parter with this guy, where not only did we talk about Dream Theater, but the recording failed, and then we had to do it again. We mashed that up together. We called it like episode whatever number complete. I feel like I need to change the name of that to complete at the time. It's a badass in episode of the podcast. But there's so many other bands we talked about over there. And the Fright Lab is where you need to be listening all of your favorite terrifying ideas, and you know, me and Lucas are putting together some really creepy stuff. So that's the frightlab.com, frightlabpodcast.com. You can find that on your browser of choice. There are links to Discord, where I'm still trying to get this guy to show up and talk about the nerdy things. So give him all the pressure that he needs to get on Discord and chat with the rest of us, because we like horror movies, we like metal bands, this guy loves Dream Theater, and so many other things. So that's where you can find me. And if you ask really nicely, that's where you can find John sometimes too.
A little bit, maybe. I should probably do that. The problem, I got to figure out what a Discord is anyway. To me, Discord is those fan pages we talked about.
Well, John, Discord is a G, Discord is a C, and this one is a D.
That is, Kale, that one was for you, man. That one was for you. There's no better way to end it. Man, guys, I cannot thank you guys enough for tuning in to another episode. Again, Brian will be back next time. Pray that his boat doesn't capsize like the Titanic. And, you know, I know it's not a capsize, but you know what I mean? dude, he's been off having a blast. Joe, thank you so much for jumping on again. All you guys in the chat, man, so many. Obviously, our good friends. Sean Faust, Chastity Crawley, Joe Gebhardt, Joe, you know, JG3. Oh, my God, so many of you guys. We love you guys, Chastity, all of you. Bob Alves, our new buddy, Ali's Studio.
Hell yeah.
Man, guys, as we've said so many times, you guys make the show go. We could not do this without you. We get so many amazing emails and so many messages every week from you guys, and you guys are absolutely fantastic. So hope you guys are all doing great out there, and we're going to be back right here on all of our normal locations, Facebook, you know, YouTube, CMSnetwork.com, TalkingIntoInfinity.com, the CMSRumblePage.com. And again, if you are watching on YouTube and you have not subscribed yet, please do so. Click that like button, click that subscribe button, and hit that notification bell, because every once in a while I do go live at weird hours of the night to tell you about something that I've seen that's pretty cool. So check that out. And guys, man, we can't do this show without you. We love you. Man, Joe, love you too.
And love you, man.
Can't end the show any other way, guys, except for to say one thing. Carpe diem.